All ayes. Oyez, oyez, oyez. The United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable William P. Green, Jr., Chief Judge, presiding. All who have business before this honorable court, draw near, and you shall be heard. You may be seated.
Good morning. The court is now in session. Are counsel ready to proceed?
Yes, sir.
Before we proceed, I would do take note of distinguished visitors. Senator Burr, glad to see you, sir. Professor, Chief Judge, many, many titles, Robinson O. Everett, good to see you. I'm very glad to see the students of North Carolina Central University Law School. Best to you. Would counsel state their names for the record?
Doug Brzezinski for the appellant.
Erica Lean for the Secretary, Your Honor, and Gates for me.
Okay, Mr. Brzezinski, you have 30 minutes to present your argument. Do you wish to reserve any of that time?
Yes, Your Honor, I reserve 10 minutes for rebuttal.
Very well. You may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, and may it please the court. Words have meaning. The words of 38 CFR 3.210B mean that Tiffany McDowell should be eligible for the dependency benefits that the appellant, her mother, seeks in this case. The reason that that meaning is clear is that the issue is not, as the Secretary would have it, that veteran Ralph Dover is the biological parent of Tiffany. The issue is whether Tiffany is eligible per the regulations for the benefit she seeks. That's all the regulations require, is that she is eligible for the benefit. It does not require biological paternity.
Would biological paternity assist her in defining that status?
Biological paternity under the Secretary's regulations is irrelevant.
Is it not secondary evidence?
It is not secondary evidence, and I can explain that. Secondary evidence, as you refer to it, is under Section 210B3, which lists three examples of secondary evidence.
But they're not exclusive examples, are they?
They are not exclusive examples, but the general description of those that precede those examples state several relevant points. First of all, it says evidence which supports the issue of eligibility, not relevant to or any other kind of explanation. Secondly, it says finding of relationship. It does not say finding of biological paternity or any other issue, but a relationship.
What section are you referring to specifically?
Section 210B3. Any other secondary evidence which reasonably supports a finding of relationship as determined by an official authorized to approve such finding, such as.
Okay, well, can we go back in the regulation? I'd like to look at the wording of the regulation here and exclude things that aren't applicable and focus in on what your argument is, if I could.
Certainly.
We're talking about the portion of the regulation that deals with illegitimate children, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. So, is it your position that 3.210B1, for example, which says that a person will be considered a child of the veteran if there is an acknowledgement in writing signed by him? Are you alleging that there is an acknowledgement in writing?
No, Your Honor.
Okay, and then and there's no judicial decree of support.
That's also correct.
Okay, so your argument then is focused only on the secondary evidence portion.
Yes, Your Honor. Actually, we can focus even on little I, the middle of the three under Section 3,
okay,
which is statements of persons who know that the veteran accepted the child as his. And if I may explain, applying the general rules of statutory and regulatory construction, if we look at 210 in its entirety, it is a sequence or B, under illegitimate child, just that section, focusing on that section, there are two sets of disjunctive requirements. A, or one, which is, you said, an acknowledgement. Two, which is other evidence. And then three, there's also a subset under there. They are joined by the word or in each case. Statutory construction, the rules of statutory construction, both the federal summary of those as well as Sutherland's statutory construction sections explicitly state the general rule is or is disjunctive, which means any of those. So just focusing in on 210B3, little I, double little I, triple little I, any one of those is sufficient to be secondary evidence.
So are you asserting that if a claimant were to demonstrate any one of these factors, irrespective of any other evidence in the claims file, that that would be per se evidence of a relationship and they would be eligible for DIC?
Yes, Your Honor, if I may explain. The reasoning here is that the Secretary made this regulation. If the Secretary wanted to include evidence of biological paternity, he could have.
Well, the Secretary's regulation does state in B, the preamble section of B, that says the sufficiency of evidence will be determined in accordance with the facts in the individual case.
Yes, Your Honor.
So if there were facts, such as in this case, which seem to demonstrate no biological relationship, and you have evidence of statements of persons who knew the veteran, accepted the child, wouldn't that statement of persons who knew the veteran accepted the child be weighed or determined to be sufficient against the backdrop of the other evidence in the file?
No, Your Honor, and there's several reasons if I may explain. First of all, the next sentence after what you read says, proof of such relationship will consist of, and then again, it has the disjunctive list with the subsets disjunctive list. So there's not biological paternity of one of those items. Secondly,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Secondly, this is not a balancing test. If it was allowed to be a balancing test, under the theory that I believe the Secretary is trying to explain in her brief, allowing the Secretary or the Board or whoever deciding this to add on additional factors or criterion would allow the Secretary to add on as many as he needed to overcome any of the others.
Did the Secretary present the biological testing? Is
No.
that the Secretary's evidence or her evidence?
That was submitted by the appellant.
By the appellant?
Yes, Your Honor. Prior to my representation, I may add. I would not have advised that. but I would go to say it shows that she's an honest woman who may have been confused about what it meant.
Appreciate that. But it is a fact.
Yes, Your Honor, it is a fact.
It is a fact of this particular case.
Yes, Your Honor, but it's not a relevant fact. I would contend it's no more relevant than if 4 out of 5 dentists said something.
Well, when you look at the parts of the regulation that you're focusing on, in terms of the evidence will consist of, it would not be possible for him to acknowledge, well, the child was born after his death.
That is correct.
So consequently, he could not acknowledge that, at least subsequent to the birth of the child.
Well, no, Your Honor. The record shows the statements within the record, which, by the way, the board accepted as proof, said they were
accepted
probative, just not as probative as others.
And he's not listed on the birth certificate.
No, Your Honor, but that also goes to the weighing of evidence theory that the Secretary is presenting. They also presented...
But did they not say that that evidence preponderated, or the evidence of the DNA testing preponderated against the other?
First of all, on the birth certificate issue, the board used the lack of evidence as negative evidence. And I would contend, particularly in this case, that's inappropriate, because what the board said was there was no name on the birth certificate, therefore Mr. Dover could not be the father. That same logic applies. No man could be the father. That could be used against every man as negative evidence. So it's inappropriate to use negative evidence. 5 out of these 6 are not going to be met. In every case.
In the state of Georgia, under the Georgia law, if she's married, the husband is presumed father. Is that correct?
I do not believe.
You don't know?
I don't know Georgia law. I didn't look at Georgia law because it didn't apply.
In this particular case, she was married at the time, was she not?
That is what the record shows, yes.
Of conception.
That is correct. But the board did
not to the appellant.
That's correct. But the board did not use it.
Of course, the other presumption is that if you're listed on the birth certificate, you're presumed a father.
That, under state law, I believe that's correct in Georgia.
And so she had, and as far as we know, the birth certificate did not have his name on, did not contain his name.
That's correct, Your Honor, but I believe that makes my point. Legally, if her husband's name was on the birth certificate, he is considered the father, but he's not the biological parent. The same thing here. This is not a biological issue. If they wanted to make it a biological issue, they could put it in here. And the reason you cannot add it post is that, again, using statutory construction, what they can add are only similar things to the examples given. Unless there's some reason, the secretary has to explain why that does not hold here. For example, in this case, there's two that I can think of. One, he could have had a will that said, I confess upon my death, I did this terrible deed, but she's my daughter and I want her to have my worldly goods. Secondly, he could have had a deathbed confession to a nurse or a practitioner. None of that's in here.
But why would we want to exclude clear evidence of no paternity? What public policy purpose would that serve?
There is no provenance on this DNA test. If you accept the evidence in the negative, I ask you to look at what would have happened if she submitted one that said 99.99. There's no. If you throw this open to that, she could have gotten two brothers. She could have gotten her father and herself and submitted. You throw this wide open to everybody coming in with DNA tests that say 99.9.
What would you have the Department of Veterans Affairs do if the test that she provided to VA showed that he was the father?
If it did provide?
Right.
There's no negative evidence here. It's beside the point.
Just simply, if the test had shown that he was the father, would you have expected VA to grant the benefit?
I don't think we would be here. I think they would have. But I have experience with VA. The VA may be arguing we may have been in reverse chairs.
It's irrelevant to the award. Is that correct?
We may have been in reverse positions, Your Honor, where they would be arguing that is not in the regulation. And since it's their discretion to not add it to the regulation, it's immaterial. There are many, many cases that I'm dealing with where there's evidence in the record and it's declared by the board to be not material to the issue, and that's why they didn't talk about it, or for various other reasons. But again, if we're going to set a rule here on, admittedly, not the greatest facts, that rule is going to be applied across the board. And if we say DNA test is open here, I can get DNA tests.
Well, do you find that there is sufficient, absence the DNA result, do you find that there is sufficient evidence in the record to establish parental relationship?
Yes, Your Honor. We meet.
Which evidence did she proffer would satisfy the requirement?
The two statements from admittedly adverse witnesses. If you read them, they're sisters.
Well, just a minute. Now, the regulation says from disinterested parties. So you're saying that the two sisters are disinterested?
I don't believe it says disinterested, Your Honor. It says statements of persons who know that the veteran accepted the child.
Okay.
And even if it was disinterested, I would say people who are adverse.
And who notarized? Who notarized those statements?
One was notarized by a notary of the state of Georgia. The other one was not notarized. But again, my point, it does not say anywhere in this regulation that the secretary put out there that they have to be notarized. I understand that the statute from which it draws has some language preferred. The secretary elected not to prefer that.
Well, going back to my question with the preamble section of B, I understand that under Mariano, VA cannot develop facts to deny a claim. But they did not develop this fact. Your client submitted this evidence of the DNA evidence. And I'm not clear as to the certainty with which you say there is no weighing of fact when the statement says the sufficiency of the evidence will be determined in accordance with the facts of the case. So to me, saying that there's a determination as to the sufficiency and the evidence that they're talking about, wouldn't that be the evidence that you point to?
Your Honor, again, I believe you have to read that preamble in its entirety.
Right.
The first sentence as to the mother is not applicable here. The second sentence and the third sentence are have to be read together.
So in your determination, proof is conclusive. It's not just evidence.
If the board or the agency of original jurisdiction finds that there was some probative value to one of these six, the evidence in one of these six categories, then the board or the agency must conclude the child is eligible. I again refer you, every one of these, regardless of 1, 2, 3, is administrative. It's paper. It has nothing to do. As a matter of fact, there's been many changes to this regulation of statutes over the years to expand the administrative description of a child because it didn't used to cover adopted children. It didn't even used to way back discuss illegitimate children. As a matter of fact, that definition is continuing to water down. It just means children outside of a marriage. None of these. It's very simple. This whole thing could say a blood test or DNA test, period. That all 210 needs to say. It doesn't say that. It doesn't say that for a reason, because there are so many other ways in society that children and families are put together now. If the Secretary wanted to, notice and comment rulemaking is out there to do that, to aim this at a fact pattern that some find amusing, is not, this is the test of the law. The test of the law here is on facts that are on the edge, not dead in the middle.
I'd like to turn to a slightly different area. You referenced that if VA were to accept or require DNA evidence, that you would be able to come in with alternate DNA evidence. Did you challenge the validity of the DNA evidence your client proffered?
No, Your Honor. I was not involved in the case. This is actually quite appropriate.
Right, but before our court, did you assert that this was, for example, as we do in other cases, this was an inadequate medical examination or inadequate medical opinion, that even if VA, in your opinion, shouldn't have been able to rely on it at all, shouldn't have relied on it in this case because it was not properly done. Did you make that assertion?
No, and I don't make that assertion.
Okay.
This is a legal, strictly legal issue, which is why I asked for reversal and why I think reversal is appropriate. If this standard that they applied is not allowed by the regulation, there's only one answer here. She's eligible because we have some evidence that the board itself found convincing.
Tell me again what that evidence is, that if we were to reverse, which would mean an award of the benefit, upon what evidence is VA saying, because that would be it would establish some precedence.
I appreciate the cites to the record.
The record page is 166 and 175 are statements from Ms. Reese and Ms. Bailey, who are the sisters of the deceased veteran. One is notarized and one is not. The board did not challenge that they were legitimate, and both of them are essentially what you would call hostile witnesses. They both say they dislike this lady very much. However, my brother did tell me, and back to your earlier comment, he knew she was pregnant, according to these witnesses, that they had just found out. We have no counterfacts. We have no challenge to that by the Secretary.
What about the other statements that she submitted? That Ms. McDowell submitted.
Well, we also have her testimony that he is the biological parent, but he also that he was happy that.
So it's either biological. She's saying he's the biological parent.
But she also says he acknowledged the child as his, regardless.
As
they believed it was their biological child, but that's the fact that whether it is or isn't is not here. What is the belief and that he was happy and that he was going to take care of the child. Is all three women say that.
But
we only need the two persons who know, and I'm not counting her as, I'm counting her, the appellant as the
third. So you're counting just the sister's statement?
Yes, yes, Your Honor.
I have a question. Are you familiar with the case of Birch v. Brown?
Yes, Your Honor. I have read
it. It wasn't cited in your brief.
No, I discovered that as I prepared for today's.
That case to me would seem to indicate that this court's already ruled that that biology is a part of determining who is a child and who isn't.
Well, I don't think it ruled on that at all. There is a discussion of some of the fact pattern in there, but there was no holding at all. I don't think that was addressed at all in the case. I will review that as my time expires, but that was my reading of that case. It was the only case actually that addressed.
Actually, what the case did was it adopted the reasoning of the Board of Veterans' Appeals, and it said it was a thorough decision, and that the board agreed with it on a motion for summary affirmance by the secretary.
It actually said it wasn't going to summary affirm it, but it said a paragraph said essentially there was nothing here to argue over. It was not raised.
And the quote that I take out of there is the quote from the case, which is really a quote from the board's determination, is that part of the reasoning was that pension benefits in this case were disallowed was because that the children are not the biological children of the veteran and therefore do not qualify as adopted children in this case. But biology was certainly a matter of consideration for the board, and that, as I read this case, at least potentially, that ruling was adopted by the court. Now, why should I not be guided by Birch in reaching the decision here?
You can be prepared to tell him in your 10 minutes.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Yes, I will do that.
Thank you. Ms. Lee?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, again, my name is Erica Leem, representing the Secretary, and with me today is Gail Stroman. The BVA decision on appeal should be affirmed because the Board properly determined that the probative evidence of record weighed against appellant's claim and that the Board properly applied Section 3.210B. Contrary to appellant's interpretation of 3.210B, the list of possible evidence to be considered in determining the relationship of an illegitimate child to the father is merely a list of examples and is not an exclusive list. First, the plain language of the regulation makes it clear that the determination is dependent upon the facts of the individual case.
Before you go through the regulation, could I ask you a question which I think kind of goes to the heart, at least for me, of this, or the question I'm trying to resolve? It seems to me that the basic difference of opinion between the Secretary and the appellant here is that the appellant is claiming that the benefits to the child flow from a relationship, not from a biological result. The Secretary, it seems to me, is saying that absent a legal adoption, there has to be a biological relationship between the father and the child. Have I stated it correctly?
Yes, Your Honor, that is correct.
Now, where in the regulation or the statute can you show us that biology is important at all?
Well, Your Honor, it's the Secretary's position that first, biology is...
I didn't ask what your position. I asked you where the regulation or the statute, what should I go to guide me in resolving that issue? Because it seems to me that's the essential issue here, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
So where, what statute, what regulation should I look at? Well, we can talk about philosophy after that, okay?
Thank you, Your Honor. Well, first, if we could look to 3.210B. Biology here is implicit in the regulation when we are determining the relationship between an illegitimate child and the potential parents. First, actually, if we could take a look at what's required of the mother, just as a little side note here. All that's required of the mother is to basically present the birth certificate showing that she gave birth to this child. She therefore has a biological relationship to the child. Biology, therefore, is relevant in determining that relationship. And as to the father,
that needs to be proved, right?
Well, correct, because if she gave birth to the child, it's on the birth certificate, therefore the biological relationship is established. With the father, a little trickier. However, biology is still important because he is still the biological parent of this child. When you're dealing with illegitimacy, you're basically dealing with a question of whether this child was born to parents out of wedlock.
Born, I'm sorry?
Born to parents that are out of legal wedlock, basically. That would be illegitimacy.
Right.
So therefore, it is implicit in the regulation.
But the regulation goes on to establish other ways that, in this case, the father can, or the child can obtain benefits from the relationship that's established. For example, you know, one that's listed in the regulation is if the father, in writing, acknowledges the child.
Correct, Your Honor.
And that is absent. You know, that could happen without the father being the biological father of the child, could it not?
Oh, correct, Your Honor.
And if, in fact, that was the case, wouldn't the secretary provide benefits? If there had been a writing in this case, said, I acknowledge that this child is mine, would the secretary not?
Would
that be the end of the inquiry?
Well, Your Honors, respectfully, it would depend on the individual facts of the case. It would depend on what other evidence was of record at the time and the weighing of that evidence of record at the time. Bringing us back to this case here, we do have biological evidence of record that shows an extremely, extremely low percentage of paternity.
Let's put it the other way. Is it your view that the secretary then, in determining paternity, biological paternity in a case, could use the term order in a very broad sense, such a test on their own, instead of having the appellant in this case provide the test or volunteer to participate in the test?
Well, Your Honor, I would kind of speculate just a little bit. At the time that this regulation was written back in the 30s, I'm actually personally not entirely sure what the status was of DNA testing, whether it existed back then. But also over the years, DNA testing has become less and less invasive, but I would believe that at the time that this regulation was written, it was possibly an invasive test.
But that leads me to ask, this regulation has been addressed subsequent to the 1930s, and clearly even if DNA evidence hasn't been readily available for that long a time, blood tests to establish likelihood of paternity have been for even longer. I don't see the regulation requiring that.
Well, correct, Your Honor. It would seem kind of unfair to require something as invasive as a blood test for children or for the veteran. I think that the agency would want to steer away from having to require something that invasive.
Let me ask you this question. I'm sorry.
Please.
There's no issue here with the fact that there wasn't a live birth. In other words, the secretary is not contending that the acknowledgement, while the appellant here was very early in her pregnancy, had any impact on this. There's no.
No, Your Honor.
Okay, so that's not an issue here. Okay.
No.
I'd like to go back to Judge Hagel's question. If somebody came in with evidence of a judicial decree, as in B2, it's the Secretary's position that that would not be conclusive evidence of a relationship and proceed to provide benefits to the child?
Your Honor, again, it would depend on the individual facts of the case and what evidence was of record.
Can you respond to the appellant's statement that the statement proof of such relationship will consist of?
Yes, Your Honor. Proof of such a relationship will consist of, and then the regulation is broken down into parts 1, 2, 3, and then subparts.
Exactly.
1, 2, and 3. But when you get down to part 3, it does say that any other secondary evidence which reasonably supports a finding of a relationship.
Right, but I gave you an example that's, you know, it's very clear, there's no additional options for that. Let's just say they came in with a judicial decree. Would that not be per se evidence? Would that does proof not mean conclusiveness? Does proof just mean evidence to the Secretary? Or how does the Secretary define proof?
Well, Your Honor, proof, I guess, would be the evidence that was before the adjudication officer at the time, and how that adjudication officer would then determine the sufficiency of the proof, I guess, would depend on a weighing of the evidence. So, therefore, I hesitate.
So your position is that the appellant's reading of the statute to establish that, yes, they weigh evidence, but if somebody were to submit one of the items listed under 1, 2, or 3, that would not necessarily per se be sufficient to establish the element of relationship.
Well, no, I mean, such as in this case where secondary evidence consisted of a DNA test, that DNA test was more probative than the statements that were in the record. So, again, it is a weighing of evidence, and in this particular case, we have concrete scientific DNA evidence that the board properly found to be extremely probative. And more probative than the statements in the record that were somewhat speculative, possibly, and not in of questionable probative value in light of the...
Excuse me. What standard does the Secretary use in evaluating whether the evidence is sufficient? Is it the benefit of the doubt? Is it...
I guess the preponderance of the evidence... So where in this case the board did find that the preponderance of the evidence weighed against appellant's claim.
And what would our review of that finding be?
It would be whether it's a clearly erroneous finding, whether there is a plausible basis in the record for that determination.
Speaking of benefit of the doubt, I take it that there were alternate theories here. Either Ms. McDowell was indicating that the veteran was the biological father, and therefore benefits should be awarded to their daughter. And if that didn't work, then there was acknowledgement by him that was his daughter. So we took care of the biological testing, and that moves us to the acknowledgement arena. Did the board, in your estimation, satisfactorily address that evidence? Did they find that evidence not credible?
Well, Your Honor, they did not make a credibility finding specifically. They only found that this evidence was less probative.
Now, if they didn't find it not credible, did they provide any further assistance or give any benefit of the doubt to that evidence as would be required within that non-adversarial environment?
Well, I believe that the board accepted the evidence and accepted the intention of the appellant as to why she submitted it, and it was an honest intention.
Would it be appropriate for the court to rule that a statement by a veteran's sister 11 years after his death indicating that he had acknowledged an unborn child be sufficient to establish relationship under 3.210?
Well, in this case, Your Honor, no. And also, some of these statements that were submitted are relatively implausible in light of the DNA testing record at 105.
Is that 105?
105, yes. A statement from Joan Dover, the sister of the deceased veteran, that says that the veteran was the biological father, which is, in light of the DNA test, implausible. I guess also there are statements in the record as to the veteran's intention, I guess, record at 106, that from Sonia Winkles, that the veteran stated that he only wanted it if it was a girl. At this point in the pregnancy, when the veteran was alive, I find it hard to believe that they would have known the sex of the child. So there are other statements that if the child was a girl, the veteran would buy her a car. Statements such as this nature are relatively speculative. We don't know what would have happened had the veteran lived through the birth and then found out that this was not his biological child. And to bind the veteran to the child, to say that there is this relationship, is not necessarily, in all situations, the best.
I'm just asking that question, whether or not the fact that this was not a live birth here had any impact on it. Your answer was no.
I'm sorry, I misunderstood the live birth, what you had meant by live birth.
Does the failure of the board to discuss that evidence constitute an inadequacy in its reasons or basis?
Your Honor, the Secretary's position on that is no, that the board properly considered the evidence. The evidence, the statements were noted in the decision, and the board properly found that it was less probative than the scientific DNA evidence.
Did it say why it was less probative? Or should they be required to? Should it be required to?
Well, Your Honor, admittedly, the board may not have done the most perfect job of explaining reasons and bases here, but the Secretary would argue that that's harmless error, and that the facts here, we have such a strong piece of evidence here that the board found to be the most probative, that being the DNA evidence.
Well, you're talking about how probative it is. Like that's the Secretary's argument. That this, first of all, that he has to be the biological father. That's number one. And number two, that this evidence is the most probative of all the evidence in the record. It's so probative that the VA wouldn't even have to, the board, I mean, would not even have to discuss some of the other evidence that would be favorable to the veteran. That's the Secretary's position, correct?
Well, Your Honor, respectfully, the board does still have to provide reasons and bases, and the board still does have to note the reason for its findings and the relevant evidence of record,
right.
which it did. It did do that, Your Honor.
Did they talk about each particular piece of evidence and weighed them against this test?
The Secretary
said earlier that they didn't do the best job.
Yes, Your Honor. That is correct. They did not do the best job, but they did a sufficient job.
Okay, now let me ask you this. If that evidence is so probative, if biological paternity is so probative, why isn't it in the Secretary's regulation? There's all kinds of, a whole list here of evidence that the Secretary who writes these regulations could have put evidence of paternity in here. But that doesn't exist. There's not a word of being a biological father in here. In these elements of proof that counsel for Ms. McDowell referred to. Isn't that significant?
Well, Your Honor, the Secretary disagrees. The Secretary finds that that biology is implicit in the regulation because biology is at issue. Also,
does the word illegitimate child have any meaning?
Well, yes, Your Honor. An illegitimate child would be a child with a biological relationship to parents that were out of wedlock at the time of birth.
And so are you saying that that is where we should impliedly factor in the fact that in all of this evidence here, these examples of evidence, the term illegitimate child infers that it's actually a biological child? Is that your argument?
Yes, Your Honor. That is the Secretary's position. And in addition, if you look to the structure of the regulation, it does set out, it sets out legitimate, illegitimate, adopted, stepchild. So it separates out other relationships other than biological, and in that an adopted child is not necessarily biologically related. A stepchild is not necessarily biologically related. So these are different relationships. Illegitimacy entails biology. So by the structure of the reg, by the term illegitimate, the Secretary's position is that biology is relevant and implicit in the regulation.
Well, clearly, if you had illegitimacy, but you had biology, in other words, if the test showed that Mr. The veteran, Mr. Dover was the biological father, would you still have to have an acknowledgement by him that that's his child for purposes of the benefit?
Under the regulation, no, that would not be necessary. And in this case, with the veteran being deceased, it would have been impossible for him to.
Let me go back to something we talked about earlier when I asked why doesn't the Secretary require DNA or blood evidence, and you said they wouldn't want to be so intrusive. In this case, the appellant was very forthcoming and offered this evidence. Doesn't the Secretary's policy sort of encourage a claimant to potentially hide the ball and not offer DNA evidence since the regulation doesn't require it? If Ms. McDowell had not done that, it's quite possible that the Secretary would have awarded her benefits based upon the statements of her of the veteran's sisters.
Well, hypothetically, that could have happened, but again, the case in front of us here is that the appellant did submit the DNA test, and that evidence was before the board. The board, by statute, is required to consider all evidence of record. And the board did the proper thing here.
What is the Secretary's view of Burke? The case that I asked Mr. Mazinski to discuss. I noticed it also was not cited in the Secretary's
brief. Yes, Your Honor. Respectfully, it was not cited in the brief, and I'm not entirely familiar with the case, but the Secretary would like to agree with your interpretation of that case.
Well, I didn't make an interpretation. I asked a question. And the question is it because this is an issue that's presented as a resolution. And I look at Birch as the only precedent that I can find and that my law court can find on this specific issue. So,
yeah.
As Mr. Rosinski, I think, argued, is perhaps not the most direct exposition of this issue, but it does deal with the issue.
Yes, Your Honor. The Secretary would agree that the case is on point and would agree that it supports the Secretary's position here.
Ms. Leem, going back to the harmless error issue. If we were to find that the board did err in its reasons or basis, are we permitted to look at those facts submitted to determine if it's prejudicial and conclude that it is harmless?
Yes, Your Honor. The facts that are in the record before you are relevant. The board's finding and the board's weighing of the evidence here was proper.
Now, of course, you said earlier that you would like us to resolve this case on the basis of clearly erroneous standards. And that's based on your interpretation, I assume, that that were to decide a question, that the board decided a question of fact, and that question of fact was whether or not this was the biological child for the veteran. Correct?
Well, correct, Your Honor. It's, I mean, the larger question, of course, is whether the child is eligible, but that would depend, of course, on that relationship, on that fact,
that,
yes.
Is that why you say the standard, our standard review is clearly erroneous?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, so the board decided that fact. We have to view that. That's a factual finding. The statute requires us to decide that on the basis, or review that on the basis of, we don't reverse it, it's clearly erroneous.
Correct.
Aren't we also interpreting the definition of this word illegitimate child? I mean, we had some. You said that we have to infer from illegitimate child that there's a biological relationship. So it seems to me that one of the things that we have to do here is interpret the term illegitimate child. Would you agree with that?
Well, Your Honor, I would argue that it is the Secretary has interpreted this regulation to mean that there is this biological relationship.
You haven't pointed, and I asked you, the very first question I asked you was, where in the regulation is this biological relationship set out? The only thing that I recall you pointing to me was the term illegitimate child. Now, if I'm wrong, please tell me, but this is important to me, at least. Am I correct about that?
Well, yes, Your Honor. You're correct that this argument largely does turn on the interpretation of illegitimate child. However, the Secretary's role under this regulation is to determine the sufficiency of the evidence to establish a relationship between the child and the parent. And what was done here was that the Secretary did weigh the evidence.
Again, you used the word, just now, you used the word sufficiency of the relationship, which is exactly what the appellants argued, that there is a sufficient relationship here under the terms of proof that have been established by the Secretary. Right. I'll go back to my original question. In order to find in your favor, don't we have to say that the term illegitimate child means the natural child of the veteran?
Yes, Your Honor.
And if we have to infer that from that statement, if we have to add that to the regulation, aren't we interpreting that phrase?
Well, Your Honor, I...
You don't want to answer yes, I haven't heard you answer no. It's a very simple question.
Your Honor, right. I suppose if I were to give you a one-word answer, it would be yes. However,
all right,
I'm tempted to expand.
But isn't a good legal answer maybe?
Well, I'm not going to accept that. So if the answer is yes, what's our standard of review of that question?
I believe it would be arbitrary and capricious.
Why would it be de novo? Isn't that a legal determination?
Oh, sorry. Yes, Your Honor, that would be de novo.
Okay.
My mistake.
Now, go ahead and explain why.
Okay, well, I... Respectfully, Your Honors, what I was trying to explain was that what we have here is a regulation that was promulgated by the Secretary based on, I guess technically it was based on the statute, Section 501, which is the statute that gives the agency the authority to promulgate the regulations. What we also have, though, is statute Section 101-4A, which we also rely on as to 3.210B. And in that statute under, it would be 101-4A, subpart 3, it's very, very similar language to the regulation. And under this statute, the sufficiency of the evidence is whatever is satisfactory to the Secretary as to the showing of the father of such a child. And it's the Secretary's interpretation of this regulation that biology is important, that illegitimacy does entail biology.
Would you mind reading that to us? We're searching here for the copy of the book.
I'm sorry.
And we don't have it, so.
I can share my copy.
Let's see if we can find it.
Okay.
Would you, before you give it to us, would you make sure the secretary doesn't have any objection? Sure.
So we're looking at 101-4A, subpart 3, skipping down to, I guess, after that semicolon, after institution, and then you skip down where it sets out an illegitimate child, 1, 2, 3 lines down. Is that?
Okay.
Where it says, or an illegitimate child, but as to the alleged father, only if acknowledged in writing signed by him, or if he has been judicially ordered to contribute to the child's support, or has been before his death judicially decreed to be the father of such a child, or if he is otherwise shown by evidence satisfactory to the secretary to be the father of such a child. So again, my point being, Your Honors, that
Congress hasn't required this and has deferred certain level of deference to the agency to create the evidence that is sufficient.
Yes, Your Honor.
Has the Secretary issued, or has the General Counsel issued any precedential opinion, or are there any manual provisions that the Secretary has rendered that would be illustrative of their determinations?
Well, Your Honor, the current M21-1 isn't quite so helpful in that it's the same language as 3.210B, but if I did look to the historical M21-1, and that manual does actually specifically set out biological child, veteran married to a child's mother, biological child, veteran not married to a child's mother. So again, biology is a component.
Was that cited in your brief?
My apologies, Your Honor. It was not cited to in my brief.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Rosinski, you have your 10 minutes, and if you want to answer Judge Hayes' question on Birch, that would be great.
Yes, Your Honor. And as far as your question on Birch, I would refer you to the decision on page 513, where the court talks about, as to the status of appellant's two dependent children, the board carefully reviewed the controlling statute, 38 U.S.C. 101-4, which we just spoke about, and the applicable regulations, which they cite as 38 CFR sections 3.22, 3.23, and 3.57, which have been renumbered since then. But the operative part here is in a quote. 38 CFR section 322 provides for payment of improved pension benefits to a veteran surviving spouse or children, citing 101-4, defines the term child. This term is defined as a person who is unmarried and under the age of 18 years and who is a legitimate child, comma, a legally adopted child, and in certain circumstances, a stepchild. So Birch doesn't even reach the issue of illegitimate children.
Go on in that decision. Doesn't it say, because the board found that these children, I think there were two children seeking pension benefits, were not the biological children, they're not eligible.
Yes, Your Honor, I have one more section to read. After that quote, which cites the record at 7, the board found that there was no indication in the evidence submitted by and on behalf of appellant that her two dependent children were living in the veteran's household at the time of his death or that they were legally adopted by appellant. The board concluded that because the children, now it goes to quotes, are not the biological children of the veteran, and they do not qualify as adopted children, they do not fall within the purview of the VA's definition of child for the purposes of improved pension benefits, again, citing the record at 8, which is the board decision. So it's citing It's citing the board decision for a conclusion based on a definition that doesn't even include illegitimate children. Plus, I go back to my original point, which is the court's holding was not on the definition of illegitimate child. It was using this as a factual background to say the board's ultimate decision was correct. So the court did not address this language. We are now addressing the language, which is, in my view, much different because there's the definition of illegitimate child. Also, to go to the point of illegitimate child, the header, the caption being a definable term, one, I would hold that the definition is all the following parts of the regulation. But also, if you look, there's four parts to 210, A, B, C, and D. A is entitled legitimate child. B is illegitimate child. Arguably, those two have something to do with biology. The third one is adopted child. It has nothing to do with biology. The fourth one is stepchild, also potentially either way, depending on which parent you're talking about. But more importantly, under A, legitimate child states, and I quote, where it is necessary to determine the legitimacy of a child, evidence will be required to establish the legality of the marriage of the mother of the child to the veteran or show that the child is otherwise legitimate by state laws, which you're referring to. It tells you how to determine whether you're legitimate or you go to the section on illegitimacy. If you're married, you establish a marriage, you're in the legitimate section. If you don't establish marriage, you're in the illegitimate section, and that's where we are. Further, and one very important point that often gets lost, even in my briefs and this discussion. The Secretary has provided their discussion and their views on the interpretation of a lot of language, not just illegitimate child, but sufficiency and the definition of all the different sections that we've talked about. I have provided, on behalf of the appellant, another set of interpretations of several terms. It is our position that our definitions and our interpretations are possible. They're not excluded by anything that I've heard here today. Even if you go with the Secretary's interpretation across the board, and each time you accept her explanation and excuses why it's not in there, even if you come up and say, well, that's a possible interpretation, Gardner v. Brown governs. If the appellant's interpretation is reasonable, then the court should adopt it. Not that it's the one that the court necessarily believes is 100% correct, but it's a reasonable interpretation. Nothing the Secretary said in her brief or in his brief or in this discussion challenges the appellant's interpretation of this language as unreasonable.
Of which one?
Any of the language. Illegitimacy.
B32. Okay, that's a regulation.
That's right.
Gardner was about interpreting the statute.
And 101 per in 4
okay,
is
well,
statute.
Let's look at 101. This is the Secretary's argument. In A4. And it talks about in A4, it says the term child means, and it lists several things. Somebody who's unmarried and a person who's unmarried and under the age of 18 years of age. And there's a disability section, and who after attaining years of age, then there's an education section. Who is a legitimate child, a legally adopted child, a stepchild who is a member of the veteran's household, or was a member at the time of the veteran's death, or an illegitimate child, but as to the alleged father, only if acknowledged in writing signed by him, or if he has been judicially ordered to contribute the child's support or has been, for his death, judicially decreed to be the father of the child. None of that is in play here, is that correct?
I agree, Your Honor.
Okay. Or is otherwise shown by evidence satisfactory to the Secretary.
Yes, Your Honor. And Section 210B is the evidence the Secretary has laid out.
You're saying that the Secretary used that language as the authority to establish 210.
Absolutely, and it is.
And if the elements in 210 are exclusive because of the use of the disjunctive word or.
As the statute also contains the exact same, you can map or the three sections to A, B, and C. They're all disjunctive, and the subset of C is also disjunctive, and that is what the secretary has stated is the evidence satisfactory to him. That's the way the system works. That's what the regulation is. It's not that they can go back to the statute and say, man, we changed our mind, all that rule and comment stuff, that was nice, but we got a case that we don't want to give anybody something.
Mr. Rosinski, do you think 38 CFR section 3.209 has relation to the statute?
I don't know how 209 fits in here, Your Honor. I was hoping the Secretary would explain it to us. As in other situations I'm sure the Court is very familiar with, there seems to be parallelism or overlap or not. It defines a child, and it talks about legitimate and illegitimate, and it tells you to go and use, the way I read it, it says you go to 210 to get more specific on the two points.
But it also kind of serves as the preamble, if you will, as to how a relationship is established if there's a question of...
The best I can put this puzzle together, there's some conflict and there's some general statements in 209, and then 210 is more specific. But 210 is what the Secretary acknowledged in the brief, 210B, to be more specific, is what's applicable. It's what the appellant believes is applicable, and it is the most detailed specification, which I would, again, under general rules of interpretation, that's where you go, absent some point which the Secretary has not pointed out why we should change the rules.
Question. If, using your interpretation, let's assume that you had a veteran and a friend of the veteran's, the veteran had a child, a teenage child, a friend of the veteran's child was having problems at home, and the veteran says, well, why don't you come to live with me? And he acknowledged that this was going to be his child, just wrote out a statement in writing, this is my child, and turned that into the VA. Under your interpretation, it seems to me that the VA would be required to pay benefits to that child. He moved into his home.
No, Your Honor. My interpretation would be that the agency or the board, whoever, would test that statement. That's where they would take that statement and say, and look behind it and say, show me evidence that you're doing this. And if
okay,
they met that.
Let's say he moved into his home.
He moved into his home, he's paying his bills and has adopted it. Yes, Your Honor. Then that would meet it for the 1 year, of course, isn't
right.
He 17. Then yes. And that is the intent, I believe, of this. The veteran's taking care of a child, has brought him in his home, and there's no difference. That's exactly what it's here for, the beneficial impact of this. I see my time has expired. May I conclude?
Thank you very much. You may conclude.
Yes. May it please the Court, just in conclusion, this is an issue of statutory interpretation. If the Court finds appellant interpretation prevails under directly or because of Gardner, then there is nothing to send back down. This case should be reversed and the benefits ordered to be paid. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rosinski. The case is submitted. We will greet the counsel at the bar and then adjourn. After the adjournment, we all will return to entertain any questions and provide any answers to those questions.
All rise.
Thank you.
Court is now in recess. You may take your seats.